नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं शैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रेषभदिषु नित्यं भगवतः सेवया भगवच्चमशोके भक्तिर्भवति वैष्णवे विजयोवाच भवेशीलवचं शिष्टे रक्षोतु हित्विपत्सल विद्वेषमकरोत् तस्मात् अनादित्यात्मजं सचिं. Vidura inquired, why was Daksha, who was so affectionate towards his daughter, envious of Lord Shiva, who is the best among the gentle? Why did he neglect his daughter, Sati?
Mukam karati vachanam bhangam langhayate girim yakipam tamam vande shi urum jinatarnam am gyana timirandasya gyanan sharasharakaya chakshuminitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Nama om vishnu padaya krishna pishtaya bhutale shimate bhakti vedanta swamini chinamine. Namaste sarasati deve gauravani vacharine nirvishesha shunyavadi पश्चात यदिष्ठारे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we have heard of all the daughters of Manu, two of whom had the Supreme Lord for their son. The Devahuti had Kapiladev and Akuti had Yajna. And also one of Devahuti's daughters had Dattatreya for her son. That was Anasuya, and Anasuya and Atri, and Prasuti had 16 daughters, of whom one, Murti, had Lord Naranarayan as her son. So all of Prasuti's daughters had children except one, and that is Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva. So now we will hear her story. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, Sahayagya pachashishtva kurovaccha pachapati anena pasavishyatam eshavostavishta kamatu. In the beginning of creation, I sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, be thou happy with this sacrifice, for it will bestow upon you all desirable things. So now, the leader of the Prajapatis, Daksha, along with the leading sages, are going to perform such a sacrifice that was given in the beginning of creation for the pleasure of Vishnu. But, unfortunately, instead of happiness, they get distress, great distress. So what is the cause of their misfortune? What is the great obstacle to the success of the sacrifice? Maybe you can tell me before I tell you. Envy. Yes, envy and pride. They go very well together. Pride and envy. So because of these two things, Vaishnava aparad is committed and everything is a failure. So one may worship Lord Vishnu, but if one is envious of his devotees, then Vishnu is not pleased. We heard how Lord Vishnu himself takes the dust of lotus feet of devotees on his head in third canto. So how can he tolerate an offense to his devotees? So let us now hear how these events unfold, with cursing and counter-cursing becoming the main topic of this chapter. An interesting thing to notice while we're reading today's verses is that Lord Shiva is being criticized, but in the Sanskrit we find all the good qualities of Lord Shiva. Somehow or other, he's being praised. instead. So it's quite interesting that although externally it appears Lord Shiva is being criticized, but through the words of the Bhagavatam, he's actually being praised. So we are emphasizing that. You can see that, we'll see that in the Sanskrit in the verses. So in this first purport, I would like to read some of the purport. Prabhupada says, in the second chapter of the fourth canto, the cause of dissension between Lord Shiva and Daksha, which was due to a great sacrifice arranged by Daksha for the pacification of the entire universe, is explained. Lord Shiva is described here as the best of the gentle because he is not envious of anyone. He is equal to all living entities, and all other good qualities are present in his personality. So in this canto, we will get quite an appreciation and attachment to Lord Shiva. Last canto, we were hearing about Lord Brahma quite a bit. Now in this canto, Lord Shiva is going to be emphasized. Very, very wonderful qualities of Lord Shiva. Why he's Vaishnavana Metta Shambhu. So here in the purport, Prabhupada begins this chapter with glorifying Lord Shiva. The word Shiva means all auspicious. No one can be an enemy of Lord Shiva's, for he is so peaceful and renounced, he does not even construct a house for his residence, but lives underneath a tree, always detached from all worldly things. Personality of Lord Shiva symbolizes the best of gentleness. Why then was Daksha, who offered his beloved daughter to such a gentle personality, inimical towards Lord Shiva so intensely that Sati, the daughter of Daksha and wife of Lord Shiva, gave up her body? So here Lord Shiva, he's living under a tree. Now how can somebody be envious? You see beggars living under the trees. Who can be envious of them? What do they have to be envious of? There's nothing they have that we want in this world. So here Lord Shiva, he's got nothing, so it appears. He has nothing material. So how can somebody possibly be envious of him? So of course, he had nothing material, but he has a wealth of spiritual knowledge and spiritual qualities. Such a wonderful personality. So verse 2 glorifies Lord Shiva. He's being glorified here by Vidura. Verse 2. Kastam chara chara gurum. Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the entire world, nirvairam shanta vigraham, is free from enmity, and he is a peaceful personality. Atmaramam, always satisfied in himself. Patam deshti jagato daivatam mahat. How is it possible that Daksha could be inimical towards such an auspicious personality? So the words here that really struck me were, and they also struck Srila Prabhupada, are charachara gurum. So Prabhupada in the purport, he says, Lord Shiva is described here as charachara gurum, the spiritual master of all animate and inanimate objects. So my question when I read this sentence, I was puzzled, like, okay, animate I can understand. But who are the inanimate objects that he's the guru of? What is this, inanimate objects? Yes, sankirtanas. All the material elements. Okay, he's the guru of all the material elements, yes?
He's the husband of Sati, or Parvati, or Durga, which is the person in charge, personality in charge of material energy.
Okay, that's a good answer. She's in charge of the material energy. He's the husband of Sati. So in that way, he's guru. He's her guru. So he's guru of the inanimate. You have something?
He's worshipful of
the dull-headed. The dull-headed. So they could be compared to inanimate objects. I was thinking along those lines too. Like, what kind of persons are like inanimate objects, basically? The dull-headed. Who are these dull-headed people?
Buddhas.
The Buddhas. Who else? The biggest mudhas in the world. Mayavadis. Because in one purport, we'll find that the Mayavadis, many Mayavadis in their next life, they will become stones and trees. So he's there, he's also, in that sense, he's the guru of the inanimate objects. Prashanta.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Oh, acha.
We hear that the stones, the mountains,
yeah.
they also have there's a living entity there.
Right, there is a living entity in.
Right.
They are the lowest of all, lower than the animals. And Prabhupada says that Mayavadis will get this birth. And there are many Mayavadis, they will become stones and inanimate objects. I also thought of some more, that Lord Shiva is the Lord of drunkards, those who take ganja. There are also many times you find inanimate objects always in their state of stupor. They are like that. So, Lord Shiva, who is more merciful than Lord Shiva, who can be the guru of all these inanimate objects? Who can compare to the mercy of Lord Shiva? We wouldn't even think of becoming the guru of a stone or like this, or a drunkard or whatever. But Lord Shiva, he's taking charge, yes. Six symptoms, right?
Growing.
Yeah, growing.
Life
six symptoms of life.
Mm-hmm. So how is the stone considered?
Yes, there are stones that grow. There are the volcanic mountains. They are considered alive. They shoot fire and they grow. They actually grow. There are some stones, even these. What's that?
There are stones that move.
That's true, flying mountains, yes. Yes. No, but there are, and also those people, those stapatis who make deities out of stone, they also say there are symptoms of life. You have to have a living stone to make a deity. One sign of a living stone is that a bug, there's a certain bug that eats it. And if they find this bug who eats a line across a stone, that's a living stone. And there are living stones that they make a certain sound when you hit them, and that shows. So you can ask actually the stapatis who carve deities, they will tell you what is a living stone. They have this information. What is a living, yes?
I heard that there's something growing, sometimes
moss. Okay, if there's moss growing on a stone, she has heard, but we need some authority here, but can look it up. Yes. Yes.
I have one stone.
Okay. You can bring it to class tomorrow and show us your stone.
I have one stone on which is written Om.
In natural. Not written. It's just naturally in the stone. And you found it, where was that? In Morocco or something?
Morocco.
A stone carved with Om. It's Shilas, yeah. It's a Shila. There are Shilas that are alive. We worship Shalagram Shila. All right, let's have that conversation after class. So let's go into the next verse. Oh, no, we won't go into the next verse. We'll have a few quotes here. In fact, I've got something here. Oh, we didn't finish the purport. Let's finish the purport first. He's sometimes known as Bhutanath, which means the worshipful deity of the dull-headed. Bhuta is also sometimes taken to indicate the ghosts. Lord Shiva takes charge of reforming persons who are ghosts and demons, not to speak of others who are godly. Therefore, he is the spiritual master of everyone, both the dull and demoniac, and the highly learned Vaishnavas. So we heard last year how Lord Shiva is merciful to the ghosts. Does anybody remember how he's merciful to the ghosts? Last year's Leela. I'll give you some more hints. Chapter 14, yes. Yes. Impious ladies and men who have illicit sex life or sex at the wrong time, he gives them bodies by sending them into the wombs of these mothers. So he embodies them, which is what they need actually, because they're unembodied. Okay? Therefore, So he takes charge not to speak of others who are godly. Therefore, he is the spiritual master of everyone, both the dull and demoniac, and the highly learned Vaishnavas. It is also stated, Vaishnavanam yata Shambhu. Shambhu, Lord Shiva, is the greatest of all Vaishnavas. On one hand, he is the worshipable object of the dull demons, and the other, he is the best of all Vaishnavas, or devotees, and he has a sampradaya called the Rudra Sampradaya. Even if he is an enemy or is sometimes angry, such a personality cannot be the object of envy. So Vidura, in astonishment, asked why he is taken as such, especially by Daksha. Daksha is also not an ordinary person. He is a Prajapati in charge of fathering population, and all his daughters are highly elevated, especially Sati. The word Sati means the most chaste. Whenever there is consideration of chastity, Sati, this wife of Lord Shiva and daughter of Daksha, is considered first. Vidura, therefore, was astonished. Daksha is such a great man, he thought, and is the father of Sati, and Lord Shiva is the spiritual master of everyone. How then could there possibly be so much enmity between them that Sati, the most chaste goddess, could give up her body because of their quarrel? So here it mentions how Shiva is merciful to everyone. So he's merciful to the demons because he's known as Ashutosh, he's easily pleased. So they come to him, they worship him. And his business is to meditate on Sankarshan. So he doesn't want to be bothered with these worshippers. So very quickly he gives them benediction, so they will stop disturbing him, his bhajan. Then his wife Mayadevi is also very free in giving mercy to everyone, even the demons and impersonalist Mayavadis. Now another point that was made in this purport is that he's also the guru of the Vaishnavas. And there are some examples here, and this is a magazine about Shiva from Krishna Katamrita. There's an example of how he is the guru of the Vaishnavas. Of course, in fourth canto, we'll hear how he'll be the guru of the Prachetas, and he gives them the prayers to Lord Krishna. Then in 10th chapter, Markandeya Rishi worships Shiva to get devotion to Krishna. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Garga Muni describes himself as a disciple of Lord Shiva. Garga Muni. So you heard of Garga Muni. He's the guru of Nanda Vasudev. And he says Lord Shiva taught him the glories of Krishna's name. So Garga Muni learned the glories of Krishna's name from Lord Shiva. Narada Pancharatra, First Ratra, chapters 8 and 9, describe Shiva act as guru for the great devotee Narada Muni. So he is the guru of the greatest Vaishnavas, as well as the lowest. Vaishnavanam yata Shambhu. So here in the Shivastakam prayers by Murari Gupta describes Lord Shiva's position as guru. Shivaya Sarva Gurave Namo Namaha. I offer my obeisances to Lord Shiva, who is the guru of everyone. So these are some nice examples how Lord Shiva is the guru also of the Vaishnavas. So Bhutanath, he also, what are some examples where he gave benedictions to demons that we know of, that we've heard of? Two very famous examples of demons. Who? Vrikasura, yes. And the other one is? Who else? Banasura, yeah, Banasura. That's the third one, yeah, okay. And there's one very famous I'm thinking of. Ravana, yes. So Ravana was very attached to pleasing him, but at the same time, he wanted to challenge Lord Ram. So when Ravana was in trouble, Prabhupada describes it on a tape. Parvati asked him, why don't you go help him in his fight with Lord Ram? He's your devotee. And Shiva said, no, what can I do? He's offended Lord Ram. So here in this magazine again, there's a nice quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita that describes exactly what's happening when Lord Shiva gives benediction to these demons. A good example is Ravana. Ravana worshipped Lord Shiva. It would seem that Shiva favored him since he granted Ravana so much wealth and power. However, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, oh, the quote's from Chaitanya Bhagavat. Vrindavan Das Thakur has given a penetrating look at Ravana's service to Lord Shiva and shown, actually, Ravana did not please Shiva at all. Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya Lila 10:148-149. Vrindavan Das states, Shira Cheri Bhakta Yena Koreta Shanan Namanaye Raghunatha Shiver Karan. Ravana worshipped Shiva, but would not worship Lord Ram. For this offense, Ravana's 10 heads were cut off. Antare charila Shiva sena jani iha seva vyatta hoila moila shavang shepuriya. In his heart, Lord Shiva rejected Ravana and did not accept his service. Ravana did not know this. Ravana's service to Lord Shiva was all in vain. In this way, he and his family were all destroyed. So this is what's happening when he doesn't really accept the service of these demons. So this is from Chaitanya Bhagavat. Vrindavan Das Thakur informs us of these things. So now we'll read some more verses in today's lesson. Verse 3. My dear Maitreya, to part with one's life is very difficult. Would you kindly explain to me how such a son-in-law and father-in-law could quarrel so bitterly that the great goddess Sati could give up her life? 4. The sage Maitreya said, and we will read the Sanskrit for this. Pura vishva shijam sate sameta paravashaya tata maragana save sanuga munayokanaya. The sage Maitreya said, in a former time, the leaders of the universal creation performed a great sacrifice in which all the great sages, philosophers, demigods, and fire gods assembled with their followers. So in the Sanskrit, we see who is present here. We have the Parama Rishaya, Paramarshaya, the great sages, Amaragana, who are the Amara demigods, and Sa'anuga, with their followers, Munaya, philosophers, and Agnaya, the fire gods. They are all here at this sacrifice. Verse 5. When Daksha, the leader of the Prajapatis, entered that assembly, his personal bodily luster is bright as the effulgence of the sun. The entire assembly was illuminated, and all the assembled personalities became insignificant in his presence. So imagine the scene. This very effulgent personality just walks in, and everyone becomes illuminated by his effulgence. So this is what happens, Vrija and Prabhu comments, when a famous person enters, they have a power that turns everyone's head. They don't have to say a word. They just have to come in the room, and everybody looks. Or they just have to walk on the street, and everyone on the street is looking. Who is that person? So this was Daksha. Everyone was attracted by his personality. Verse 6. Influenced by his personal bodily luster, all the fire gods, and you can imagine how effulgent they were, and other participants in that great assembly, with the exceptions of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, gave up their own sitting places and stood in respect for Daksha. Verse 7. Daksha was adequately welcomed by the president of the great assembly, Lord Brahma. After offering Lord Brahma respect, Daksha, by the order of Brahma, properly took his seat. So the president, when he was presiding over the ceremony, so Brahma was far superior, and so was Shiva, although he was married to Daksha's daughter. Of course, naturally, you would think the father-in-law is superior, but Shiva was superior because he's an empowered personality, a guna avatar, and Daksha is simply an ordinary jiva. So Lord Shiva didn't stand up. Verse 8. Before taking his seat, however, Daksha was very much offended to see Lord Shiva sitting and not showing him any respect. At that time, Daksha became greatly angry, and his eyes glowing, he began to speak very strongly against Lord Shiva. Verse 9. All sages, brahmanas, and fire gods present, please hear me with attention, for I speak about the manners of gentle persons. I do not speak out of ignorance or envy. So one thing we should note is that Daksha, whatever he says, it's exactly what he's doing. I'm not speaking out of envy. He's going to speak out of envy and ignorance. He's trying to cover it up. He's actually going to speak with great duplicity. And we'll find that, anyway, we'll see as it goes on, who his words actually apply to, not to Lord Shiva. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, in speaking against Lord Shiva, Daksha tried to pacify the assembly by presenting in a very tactful way that he was going to speak about the manners of gentle persons. So it's a very nice topic, manners of gentle persons, saintly persons. You like to hear about saintly persons, right? Although naturally, this might affect some unmannerly upstarts, and the assembly might be unhappy because they did not want even unmannerly persons to be offended. So, of course, if you praise the saintly persons, it might make the unsaintly persons unhappy. That's what he's saying here. In other words, he was in complete knowledge that he was speaking against Lord Shiva in spite of Shiva's spotless character. As far as envy is concerned, from the very beginning, he was envious of Lord Shiva. Therefore, he could not distinguish his own particular envy. So what does this statement mean? He could not distinguish his own particular envy. Could not. Yeah, he couldn't understand that I'm envious. What's that?
He was covered over.
He was covered over, yes, covered by ignorance. If you're in ignorance, you don't understand that you're envious, right? Although he spoke like a man in ignorance, he wanted to cover his statements by saying he was not speaking for impudent and envious reasons. So Brijan Prabhu made a really nice comment on this. He said, when you're envious, you can't see your own faults. You only see the faults of others. And he said, this is a psychological principle. The qualities that we see in others that really upset us are the faults we have ourselves. What disturbs us in other people is what we have. What is the fault in our heart? I thought that was a good statement. So he says, if you want a simple way to find your own faults is to see what really disturbs you in somebody else. So these are usually the problems we have with our own mind.
It's autobiographical.
Yes, he told us an example, right? You remember that example he told in class about himself? He was sitting in prasadam.
Oh, yeah.
And one guy, how was he sitting? He said there was, some guy was eating prasadam. He was sitting in a way he didn't like. No, his hand, it was the hand. It was the hand was down or something, or on his knee. And Burijan just couldn't take it. And he was looking at the guy. And did he say something to him? I don't know. He didn't say anything. Then he moved where he eat, yeah. And then after 2 weeks, he found that he was putting his hand like that. So that's a really good example that he gave us. That after meditating on the other person, then he found that he was doing it. And so this is what happens, that we meditate on other people's problems. And actually, it's our problem that we find in ourselves. So verse 10, now he's starting to criticize. Shiva has spoiled the name and fame of the governors of the universe, has polluted the path of gentle manners. Because he's shameless, he does not know how to act. So why is Daksha saying that he's spoiling the name and fame of the governors of the universe? How is he spoiling the name and fame of the governors of the universe? What's he doing?
Well, he's not giving the right standard to others.
Not giving the right standard?
Because he's not standing up.
Okay, he's not standing up. Okay, what else? Minimizing the position of
the leader.
Okay. Yeah, so Daksha is saying he's not recognizing me. This is his problem. So actually, now whatever Daksha says, he says Shiva is spoiling the name and fame. Actually, by criticizing Lord Shiva, Daksha spoiled his name and fame. In this canto, in the fourth chapter, verse 30, there is a verse that says, Daksha, who is so hard-hearted he is unworthy to be a Brahmin, will gain extensive ill fame because of his offenses to his daughter, because of not having prevented her death, and because of his great envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So whatever he says is going to come true for himself. So his fame will be spoiled. Not that Lord Shiva is spoiling the name and fame. Daksha is spoiling the name and fame of the governors of the universe. And Daksha is not behaving properly. So whatever words he's saying apply to himself. Actually, all these words. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains how the Sanskrit, you can follow up there. On the second verse, I did separate those words. Ashutosh is also there. And in this, you can keep this, yeah. In this 10th chapter, Yashoghana. So these words are understood in a different way. For example, he stated, Shiva is Yashoghana, which means one who spoils name and fame. This can be interpreted to mean he was so famous, his fame killed all other fame, including Daksha's. Again, Daksha used the word nirapachapa, which also can be used in two senses. One sense is one who is stunted, and another sense is one who is the maintainer of persons who have no other shelter. Generally, Lord Shiva is known as the Lord of the Bhutas, or lower grade of living creatures. They take shelter of Lord Shiva because he's very kind to everyone and is very quickly satisfied. Therefore, he is called Ashutosh. To such men who cannot approach other demigods or Vishnu, Lord Shiva gives shelter. Therefore, the word Nirapachapa can be used in that sense. So these are the glories of Lord Shiva we're hearing in this chapter. All the good qualities. Yes. Criticized Krishna. And everything was, yes, Saraswati made him actually glorify Krishna. So you can just flip the flip chart for me. On the next page, I have some quotes from the fourth canto, just the top two quotes, and after that will be for tomorrow. I have some more words that glorify Lord Shiva. For this one, 424, 24 to 25, Vi Budhanugai, worship by Gandharvas and Kinnaras. So there is a description in this verse that constantly the Gandharvas and Kinnaras are worshiping Lord Shiva. And it's described the color of Lord Shiva, that sometimes he's painted white, but there it's described the color of his skin is not exactly white, but like molten gold or glowing yellowish color. So that is some description of Lord Shiva. Verse 11. He has already accepted himself as my subordinate by marrying my daughter in the presence of fire and brahmanas. He has married my daughter, who is equal to Gayatri, and has pretended to be just like an honest person. So now he's starting to criticize his qualities. He's saying that Lord Shiva's pretending to be honest means Shiva was dishonest, because in spite of accepting the position of Daksha's son-in-law, he was not respectful. So he's trying to say that he's not honest to me. He's being dishonest. He's my son-in-law, but he's not giving me respect. He's not seeing reality, Daksha thinks, according to me. And then he's also thinking that maybe he's just pretending to meditate to avoid offering respect to me. So these are what's going on in Daksha's mind. Not respectful, that is in the purport, being not respectful. And the other one is coming up somewhere. That about meditating, that will be in a further purport somewhere in this chapter. I just brought it in here to illuminate the point.
I remember that actually he must meditate
more. Yes. Yeah. Lord Shiva will explain his position in the third chapter. He will explain why he did not externally offer respects. And Srila Prabhupada will explain also his real position. So verse 12, now he's going to get really vicious. He has eyes like a monkey's, yet he has married my daughter, whose eyes are just like those of a deer cub. Nevertheless, he did not stand up to receive me, nor did he think it fit to welcome me with sweet words. So he's describing Lord Shiva's eyes. Lord Shiva's eyes are described in the Bhagavatam. What do we know? Last year, there was a description of the three eyes of Lord Shiva by Srila Prabhupada. what are the three different eyes of Lord Shiva? Does anybody remember that? This is in 3, 14, 25, purport. Hmm? No, not past, present, future. Oh, yes, yes. But that's not what his eyes are. He can see. Prabhupada says, since he's almost like Lord Vishnu, Shiva can see past, present, and future. But then he said, one of his eyes is this, is like this, one is another is like this, and the other is like this. So, if you think of the universal form, you'll get it. Sun, the moon, and fire. Sun, moon, and fire in the middle. Those are his three eyes.
Third eye.
Yeah, that's from, I believe, from Lord Shiva. There is a chakra somewhere there, isn't there? There's a chakra. The second to the last chakra, sixth chakra, is here. Sixth chakra is here. And then the yogis are to meditate on the nose. So then they control anger, I believe, also. Anger is somewhere situated there, too, as well as in the heart, I've heard.
That's where one can see past, present, and future.
And this is where you can see past, present, and future. Okay. Yes. This is the third eye. It's right here. Right where Lord Shiva has his third eye. So then there's another purport. Oh, no, it's a verse. 8:7:30. Which describes his three eyes as being something else. And this one you'll never guess. It's the three modes of nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. His three eyes. 8:7:30. And this is a very nice verse, I'll read it. O Lord, your shadow is seen in irreligion. The demigods are praying to him to please drink up the ocean, to drink up the poison. So they're praying to Lord Shiva. O Lord, your shadow is seen in irreligion, which brings about varieties of irreligious creations. The three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are your three eyes. All the Vedic literatures, which are full of verses, are emanations from you, because their compilers wrote the various scriptures after receiving your glance. So here, not only his eyes are the modes, the glance of Lord Shiva. After Lord Shiva glanced on the compilers of the Vedas, they were empowered to write the scriptures. So his glance is also very powerful. And then 8:7:32, here's another thing from his eyes. When annihilation is performed by the flames and sparks emanating from your eyes, the entire creation is burned to ashes. So if you wonder where the fire is coming from, it's also described as coming from Sankarshan, but also here, it's coming from the eyes of Lord Shiva, fire and sparks for the destruction. This is 8:7:32. Nonetheless, you do not know how this happens. What then is to be said of your destroying the Daksha Yagya, Tiparashura, and the Kalakuta poison? Such activities cannot be subject matters for prayers offered to you. So these are illuminating us about the eyes of Lord Shiva, which Daksha is now criticizing. Well, three eyes. Anyway, he's just... Actually, I'll tell you why. I've got something written here. The Daksha, actually, they're not. They're beautiful, I'm sure. I mean, I haven't really meditated on them, but... Daksha will magnify us, take a small fault, like three eyes. Usually people have two eyes. So, okay, it could be a fault, three eyes. And he ignores the good qualities. Whereas a saintly person does the opposite. The saintly person will magnify the good and ignore the bad. So he's trying to find fault with Shiva.
That was just
No, that was just me. Yeah, there is a quote though behind it. There is a quote about the good persons. And it'll come in this Leela, actually. I just picked it up from reading the whole Leela, and I summarized. Prabhupada will probably say that in some purport. Even Sati will say it. I believe it's a verse that's coming up. When Sati starts getting angry tomorrow, then she'll say that to her father. You find fault in the saintly person who has no fault. You magnify the faults.
Authorities, fault finding is not to see fault in people.
that's all right.
Yeah.
But magnifying
magnifying the faults.
To the exclusion of seeing anything good.
Right. So, last year we heard of an example of someone who was finding the good qualities of a person. It said, a noble man accepts the good qualities of a person of doubtful character, just as one accepts nectar from a stock of poison. So who is that person we heard about last year? Very famous person, personality, Krishna. That he saw Putana's good quality, that she came as his mother. He ignored the poison part. He didn't think anything of it. So this is the purport, of course, to that verse 3.22.23. And this is good for us because Prabhupada says the Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards him the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. This is the character of Krishna. He takes the least qualification and he gives the highest reward. Someone who is completely unqualified, Putana, what's her qualification? And to be mother. So he took that little thing and he gave her that position of mother. So this is Krishna, and this is those who have the godly qualities like Krishna. They have this quality. But they will take the least qualification and magnify. Prabhupada had this. Prabhupada could do that very easily. He would find a spark of Krishna consciousness and he would fan it in somebody. So verse 13, I had no desire to give my daughter to this person who has broken all rules of civility. Because of not observing the required rules and regulations, he is impure. But I was obliged to hand over my daughter to him, just as one teaches the messages of the Vedas to a Shudra. So now he's really showing his real character. Actually, he's a caste Brahmin. The caste Brahmins, they also say you can't, you know, they take all these very strict rules and regulations, and they say you can't, they say to Prabhupada, why are you ruining Hinduism, teaching them lechas, the Vedas, not the Vedas, but Sanskrit literature. So this is what Daksha says, but we find his opinion is not shared by Srimad Bhagavatam. Last year, we heard some very beautiful verses, which I'll refresh your memory. This verse is 3.14.27 by Kardama Muni. Or it could be by his wife. Anyway, it's beautiful. Yasya navat ya charitam manishino genanta vidya patalam bibitsava nirasta sangyat ishayapi yatsayam pishachachariyam acharatpati satam. Although no one in the material world is equal to or greater than Lord Shiva, and although his unimpeachable character is followed by great souls to dismantle the mass of nations, he nevertheless remains as if a devil to give salvation to all devotees of the Lord. So why does he remain as if a devil? Why the skulls and the ashes? What is the lesson that we should learn from this? That Prabhupada said in this purport, there is a lesson that sincere devotees of the Lord should learn. Here it says, Lord Shiva's uncivilized, devilish characteristics are never abominable because he teaches the sincere devotees of the Lord how to practice, yes, detachment. How to practice detachment from material enjoyment. So that's what we learn from his behavior. This is 3.14.27. He's called Mahadev, or the greatest of all demigods. No one is equal to or greater than him. He's almost equal with Lord Vishnu. Although he associates with Maya Durga, he is above the reactionary stage of three modes of material nature. And although he's in charge of devilish characters and the mode of ignorance, he is not affected by such association. And then verse 3.14.29. Pramatayo yat kita setu pala yat karanam bishwamidam chamaya agyakariyasya pisachacharya ahavipunna sharitam vidambaram. Now this is in respect to Daksha's criticizing him as breaking the rules. Demigods like Brahma also follow the religious rites observed by him. He is the controller of the material energy, which causes creation of the material world. He is great, and therefore his devilish characteristics are simply meditation. Again, in this purport, Prabhupada says, his renunciation of all material enjoyment is an ideal example of how one should be materially unattached. One should therefore follow in his footsteps and be unattached to matter, not imitate his uncommon acts like drinking poison. So this Daksha is saying Lord Shiva is abhinna setave, he's broken all the rules, but we're hearing how Bhagavatam says otherwise. He's actually upholding dharma. And then this quote on the flip chart, 424-26, dharma vatsala. He lives according to religious principles and blesses those who follow. So he's called dharma vatsala. Quite contrary to what Daksha has to say. He is the upholder. He's very pleasing to those who follow dharma, and he is the upholder of dharma himself. So I'll read that verse, 424-26. Satam papanarti haro bhagavan dharma vatsala dharma gyashila sapanam pita pitanavashaha. Lord Shiva became very pleased with the prachetas, because generally Lord Shiva is the protector of pious persons and persons of gentle behavior. Being very much pleased with the princes, he began to speak as follows. So I won't say what he spoke, but I will read some of the purport to that verse, 424-26. Prabhupada says that Krishna is known as Bhaktivatsala, and herein we find Lord Shiva described as Dharmavatsala. Of course, the word Dharmavatsala refers to a person who lives according to religious principles. That is understood. Nonetheless, these two words have additional significance. Sometimes Lord Shiva has to deal with persons who are in the modes of passion and ignorance. Such persons are not always very religious and pious in their activities. Since they worship Lord Shiva, they sometimes obey the religious principles. Just to get what they want, they will follow some rut or some religious principles. As soon as Lord Shiva sees his devotees are following religious principles, he blesses them. So then the Prachetas were naturally very pious and gentle. Consequently, Lord Shiva was immediately pleased with them. So we'll be hearing about the Prachetas at the end of this canto. Verse 14 to 15. Now, here's the ultimate in criticism. He lives in filthy places like crematoriums, and his companions are the ghosts and demons, naked like a madman, sometimes laughing, sometimes crying. He smears crematorium ashes all over his body. He does not bathe regularly, and he ornaments his body with a garland of skulls and bones. Therefore, only in name is he Shiva, or auspicious. Actually, he is mad, most mad, an inauspicious creature. Thus, he is very dear to crazy beings in the gross mode of ignorance, and he is their leader. One of Prabhupada's godbrothers, I believe, criticized Prabhupada that, yes, he can take care of these low beings, these hippies. He can do that. I could not do that, but he is qualified. I don't know if it was a compliment or not. But anyway, yes, Prabhupada had this mercy too, that he took care of the crazy beings. If you see some of the old videos of Srila Prabhupada in Golden Gate Park, and some of the species of human beings that were surrounding him, it's quite amazing. You see all the different dresses and how they were behaving, but he had them entranced by the holy name. They were all dancing around him, holding hands in a circle. And he had these like animal-like creatures. The Prabhupada had actually, he was so merciful, he went and he tamed them. Us, actually. So Burijan commented that generally if you see somebody who does these kind of things, you will think he's crazy. Ordinarily, anybody who does something like this, wears skulls and bones, goes around naked, smears ashes on his body, lives in a graveyard or in a crematorium, then you think this guy's crazy. So Lord Shiva, this is what he does. Purport. Those who do not regularly bathe are supposed to be in association with ghosts and crazy creatures. Lord Shiva appeared to be like that, but his name, Shiva, is actually fitting, for he is very kind to persons who are in the darkness of the mode of ignorance, such as unclean drunkards who do not regularly bathe. Lord Shiva is so kind, he gives shelter to such creatures and gradually elevates them to spiritual consciousness. Right. So these, when I used to live in Goa for 5 years, and all the hippies there, they really like Lord Shiva. They worship Lord Shiva. They smoke ganja, and they think this is their puja for Lord Shiva. And you can see that this description fits of his followers, so they don't take baths. And actually, there was one ex-Guru Kuli who fit this description, who was here like in March or April this year, not April, February, March this year. And his mother came to me, my god sister, she said, "Oh, can you do something? He's married and he has a baby, and he's always smoking ganja." And so the poor baby, he couldn't sleep at night. He just screams the whole night. So I said, "Yeah, he smokes ganja, so maybe Lord Shiva's associates are, you know, over there with him." So the poor baby, you know, night after night, just screaming the whole night. And the father said, the Guru Kuli says, "I feel like throwing the kid out the window, you know." So then the mother came to me and said, "What can I do?" I said, "Yeah, well, I heard and I know that for ghosts, if you take a bath with fresh cow dung and you keep it on for 45 minutes, and then that works. And another thing you can do is you bathe yourself with salt." And salt. Salt. S-A-L-T. Salt.
Raisin salt.
Salt. Bathing. Have a bath. No? Instead of soap, use salt. So I told her, "Why don't you try this?" So she tried both. She put the kid in she put cow dung from head to foot. I said, "You can't leave any place. You have to put him head to foot." And then she washed him, and he was so happy. He was splashing in the water, and he was really, really happy. And the father, he was so dubious. "I don't believe all this. This is superstition, you know." So then that night, the kid slept. In the morning, the father came and he said, "I'm a believer." So, you know, you need to. So the bath and cow dung. So she told him, "Why don't you do it too?" And so then he did. He actually did. He went and he bathed in Jamuna. He started taking bath and cow dung. And he gave up smoking ganja, which he couldn't do before. The mother got a phone call from the States saying, from his sister saying, "I never seen him straight like this before." So anyway, the hippies, the people who are like hippies, who smoke ganja, the associates, the ghosts are there. The associates of Shiva are there with them, obviously. This kid was seeing, when you're small, like he was not even one, they can see, actually, they see subtle. They're very sensitive to subtle things, and they can actually see. So this poor kid was seeing the associates of Lord Shiva. But so bathing is very important here. Now, here Prabhupada says, "Although it is very difficult to raise such creatures to spiritual understanding, Lord Shiva takes charge of them, and therefore, as stated in the Vedas, Lord Shiva is all auspicious. Thus, by his association, even such fallen souls can be elevated. Sometimes it is seen that great personalities meet with fallen souls, not for any personal benefit, interest, but for the benefit of those souls." So that's Srila Prabhupada again. No benefit for himself. He came to meet all the fallen creatures in the West. And when he had his first look, he said, "How am I going to elevate these people in the mode of passion and ignorance? How is it possible?" So Prabhupada continues. "In the creation of the Lord, there are different kinds of living creatures. Some of them are in the mode of goodness, some in the mode of passion, and some in the mode of ignorance. Lord Vishnu takes charge of persons who are advanced to Krishna-conscious Vaishnavas. Lord Brahma takes charge of persons very attached to material activities. But Lord Shiva is so kind that he takes charge of persons who are in gross ignorance and whose behavior is lower than that of the animals. Therefore, Lord Shiva is especially called auspicious." So then again, there's another verse, 3:14:28. Asanti yasya charitam vidurbhaka svatman natasya vidusha samihitam Yagascha mayam parananulepanai svabhojanam svat mataya palalitam. Unfortunate, foolish persons, not knowing that he is engaged in his own self, laugh at him. Such foolish persons engage in maintaining the body, which is eatable by dogs, with dresses, ornaments, garlands, and ointments. So now again in this purport to 3.14.28, Srila Prabhupada gives another reason why Lord Shiva, why he actually does not accept luxurious dress and garlands and ornaments. Why doesn't he dress nicely, according to Srila Prabhupada? The real purpose of Lord Shiva is to serve the soul of the soul, Lord Krishna. He desires that all luxurious articles, nice garments, garlands, ornaments, be given to Krishna only, so he doesn't take. He's Lord Krishna's devotee, so therefore he wants it all for Krishna. Why should I dress nicely? Krishna is the Lord. That's his mentality, explained by Srila Prabhupada in the purport of 3.14.28. All the different reasons why Lord Shiva behaves as he does. And there's another reason given here in this book. There's an article entitled The Unusual Dress and Teachings of Lord Shiva in this magazine. So I'm not going to read the whole thing, it's very long. But one time Parvati had a doubt. And she asked, this is from Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, chapters 235 to 236. So Parvati had a doubt. The Shastras condemn using skulls, decorating the body with ashes. He took out the thing. And wearing skins of animals. Why are these things condemned? He says, due to woman's natural fickleness, I'm asking you these questions. It may be due to your great power, you don't have to follow the Shastras. But previously, you had not instructed me in this way. So please excuse me for this question. Parvati's asking him, why do you dress like you do? Wear skulls. So Lord Shiva said, please listen carefully. I'll tell you a very wonderful secret. You should not repeat what I am about to tell you to common people. I'll tell you this since your body is not separate from mine. Long ago, in the age of Swayambhuva Manu, so that's what we're hearing about right now, that's right now, there were many great demons like Namuchi, who were very powerful and valorous heroes. Now, this is quite interesting. All of them were devoted to Vishnu, acted purely, and were free from all sins. Not how we hear about them. They followed the practices laid down in the Vedas. Seeing this, all the demigods, headed by Indra, were greatly frustrated. Overcome by fear, they approached Lord Vishnu and took shelter of him. They said, O Keshava, only you can conquer these great demons who cannot be conquered by all the gods and who have washed our sins with penance. Lord Shiva continued, hearing the frightful words of the demigods, Lord Vishnu consoled the devas and called me over. He said to me, Rudra, you are the best of the gods. So, for the purpose of deluding the enemies of the demigods, prepare a course of conduct to be followed by Pashandis. Narrate to them the dark Puranas, which will take them astray. You should create holy texts that will cause the demons to become confused. So this was the order. Approach atheistic sages like Kanad, Gotam, Shakti, Upamanyu, Jaimini, Kapila, not our Kapila, Durvasa, Brihaspati, Bhargava, Jamadagni. Exert upon them your power of suggestion. Being infused by your power, they will become powerful Pashandis. Empowered by you, these brahmanas will narrate to the three worlds the Puranas and doctrines and the motives of ignorance. On your person, you should bear symbols like a skull, animal skins, ashes, and bones. Dressed in this way, you should fully delude everyone in the three worlds. You should inaugurate the Pashupata order with its divisions. Through these persons, you should preach a doctrine whose followers wear no particular identifying marks and are outside the Vedic fold. Wearing ashes and bones, they will be bereft of higher consciousness and will consider you to be the highest god. So then Lord Shiva told Parvati, after hearing Vishnu's words, although I'm a good speaker, I became helpless and silent. Then offering my obeisances to Lord Vishnu, I said, O Lord, if I do what you say, it will lead to my destruction. It is not possible for me to carry out this instruction. Yet your order is not to be disobeyed. This is very painful. So then Vishnu said, this will not be the cause of your destruction. Do as I order you for the good of the demigods, and I will give you the means to maintain yourself while you are preaching these demoniac philosophies. So then he gave him the Vishnu Sahasranam, and he gave him a powerful six-syllable mantra. The six-syllable mantra, Sri Ramaya Namaha. So this is his protection from behaving like that. And of course there's a lot more about this, but that's the essence of Padma Purana's story, why Lord Shiva behaves as and dresses as he does. What's that? Yeah, well, they were acting that way. They were acting sinless. I know, it's for us it's confusing, but the Puranas are like that, and that's why we have Bhagavatam. Oh, there's Bali Maharaj. And he was pious. He was also very pious, but he wasn't exactly sinless, I would say. Yes.
They were very well versed.
Yeah, he's a Brahmin.
Why is this considered to be demons?
Yeah, that was my question. The question came in my mind. Well, if they're worshipping Vishnu, and you know, then why? So that's a question. Improper worship. That could be. It's possible they could worship Vishnu just to, because the demigods are worried. So that means they want to take over, which is not the right thing. Yes. Yeah. So that's a good answer. But they want to take over the position of the demigods. So that's demoniac right there. Yeah, and that's what the demigods were worried, because they want to take over. And it's not their position to be the rulers of the universe. The demigods are given that position.
So they want to get in the job on.
Of course. Yeah, without sanction. Without sanction.
Without the punya.
Yeah, without the punya. Although they were pious, but they didn't have that much piety. That they could be take over Indra's position. That's all they want to do. That's all you see the demigods want to do, is just get the heavenly planets and live there. Fight with the demigods. All they want to do is fight with the demigods and take their position. That's what we see. So obviously the demigods were worried. So what's a nice lesson we can learn from the behavior of Lord Shiva, besides detachment? It's one lesson I have in relationship to Vaishnavas. Who is a Vaishnava? And that is, don't judge by externals. We do not know what is in the heart. So our last verse today, verse 16. On the request of Lord Brahma, I handed over my chaste daughter to him. Although he is devoid of all cleanliness, and his heart is filled with nasty things. So again, there's a Sanskrit verse, Atmaban Manyate Jagat, that you see the world as you are. So he is seeing through his own eyes, his polluted, contaminated eyes, how is Lord Shiva. So the pride of Daksha led to anger, and he's going to curse him tomorrow. And this is the opposite of Vaishnava qualities. The crowning jewel of a Vaishnava is humility, and that protects him. So in here he's even actually criticizing Brahma indirectly. You know, Brahma forced me. I didn't want to do it, but Lord Brahma made me do it. My father made me do it, so of course I did it. I didn't want to give my daughter to him, but, you know, I listened to my father. And now see what happened. Just see. So indirectly he's criticizing Lord Brahma too. In this thing. Prabhupada says that in the purport, I believe. Brahma. Prabhupada says, in other words, he accused even Brahma of being less intelligent. Parameshti. Because he had advised Daksha to hand over his beautiful daughter to such a nasty fellow. Prabhupada says in purport, he says he's criticizing Brahma now. Now he's really getting out of hand. When you get angry, then you do so many things. So which type of devotional service in the modes do we hear?
Ignorance.
So I'll read that verse again. Abhisandhaya, this is 329.8. Abhisandhaya himsang dambam matsayame pava simram vipinajipa vammai kuryat satamsa. Devotional service executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. So in the purport, Prabhupada elaborates, one who approaches the Supreme Lord to give devotional service, but who is proud, now he's, here are the qualities, proud of his personality, envious of others, or vengeful, is in the mode of anger. He thinks he is the best devotee. So all these things we have to be careful of, because even though we may be sometimes in a good consciousness, we may sometimes fall into this mentality. These are warnings for us, for all devotees. This is a very useful instruction. Devotional service executed in this way is not pure. It is mixed and is of the lowest grade, tamasa. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur advises that the Vaishnava who is not of good character should be avoided. A Vaishnava who is one who has taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life. But if one is not pure and still has motives, then he is not a Vaishnava of the first order of good character. One may offer his respects to such a Vaishnava because he has accepted the Supreme Lord as the ultimate goal of life. One should not keep company with a Vaishnava who is in a mode of ignorance. So we have to avoid the things, the mistakes that Daksha is making. And it's when you, the longer you stay a devotee, you see how the gross problems are not so much a problem for you, but it's the subtle. So now we're being given instructions on the subtle level, the mental conceptions. These are the conceptions that we have to give up to get advancement, even just to get nishta. We have to give up these mental conceptions of envy, thinking I'm the best devotee, thinking, being envious of others, being proud of our own personality. And then after becoming free from these, we can approach nishta. This is all anartha nivritti. This is our work. This is our work right now. So this we have to study very carefully, these chapters in fourth canto, because they're all about the subtle level of devotional service. And all the, just like last year, we heard how Lord Brahma was giving up his different bodies, his different conceptions. We also have to give up all these bodies before we can go back to Godhead. And you see it, like these people we see on the deathbed, that they haven't always done their work. They're not ready to go, and they have so many things that are still bothering them. So it's better if we do the work now, before death. And that's the purpose of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, to free us. This chapter especially is freeing us from all our wrong conceptions of devotional service, of Vaishnavas, of ourselves as Vaishnavas. So okay, we'll stop here. And I want to just bring your attention to the board. But before I do that, I have a few questions for you about Vaishnava Aparad. And the answers are found in Harinam Chaitanya. Yes, you get.
Please back to that anartha
nivritti. Anartha nivritti.
The state of anartha nivritti is full of the nishtha.
Yes.
However, it seems to me that anartha nivritti is not going to stay.
It is ongoing. But the reason why they call it a stage is because the worst things are removed, basically rajas and tamas. I mean, the worst of the rajas and tamas are removed by the time you get to to nishta. That is confirmed in Bhagavatam, we heard in the first canto. That is what nashta prayesha vadeshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. So Prabhupada, yes, that's true. That's true. But it's there to a much lesser degree. Your basic, see, that your mood, before you get to nishta, your mood can be mainly in passion or ignorance. And then when you get to nishta, your mood is basically in goodness. Though you may have still some 25% contamination. Prabhupada says 75% in his comments, in his class on nashta prayesha badeshu, he said 75% is gone by the time you get to nishta. 75%, rajas and tamas. And that is, the verse follows, tamo rajas tama. Yes. It can, it's true. Basically, it's on the sato after nishta. That there's traces in your subconscious or in your conscious, but not necessarily do you manifest it. After you'll act in the mode of goodness from nishta. But before that, you may act in any of the modes. Yeah, but there may be tinges, small tinges, but they're basically on the subtle level, and you wrestle with it, and it comes to your mind when you have, you know, when you deal with people. Oh, why did I feel that envy? Why did I feel that anger? And you may not express it. Like Lord Brahma, he's on the subtle. He doesn't express his anger necessarily. But it comes, and he suppresses it. Yes. So that is one of my questions today. Well, first, before that question, means the causes for Vaishnava Aparad. Why do we make offenses? The first question is, what are the types of offenses that we... how do we criticize devotees? In what way? What do we criticize devotees for? What do we find wrong with devotees? Yes.
There's a whole pattern.
Yes.
It's basically belittle persons, because it makes us feel better about ourselves.
Okay.
We have unacknowledged shortcomings.
Okay. This is more the cause again. These are causes.
And then from that, we want to deal with it in a way that we can live other people.
Right.
I'm not so bad.
Right. Yeah, so this is actually, okay, let's do the causes first. Finding fault with devotees, feeling envious. There's four things listed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One is fault finding, one is envy. Of course, the cause is that we have it in our own hearts, as we learned today from the Daksha Lila, that we have these things. So we find it in others. And another cause is that you said before, is you don't, not enough hearing and chanting, we don't water the creeper, don't chant our 16 rounds. So that could be another cause for Vaishnava Aparad. We don't know the philosophy. Again, the devotee in the Kanishta, he doesn't know the philosophy really. But he thinks he's the best devotee often. That is the symptom of the Kanishta. I'm the best devotee, and of course I know the philosophy. Yes.
Also, there's kashaya, tendency for bad habits.
Yes, kashaya, bad habits. Yeah, this is actually one of the anarchists here. Hridaya Dabayam, I think. Kashaya is in there. So, okay. There's two more causes listed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur for Vaishnava Aparad. Is feeling at first, of course we said, feeling envious, finding fault. Then the other two, you judge devotees by material standards, which is exactly what Daksha is doing. He's judging, he's seeing the external, and he's judging by material standards. And the fourth thing is asatsanga. This causes Vaishnava Aparad. You get in the wrong association, somebody starts criticizing, you don't go away, you say, oh yeah, and then you start, yeah, actually you're right. You know, that devotee does have that problem. So these are the causes of our committing Vaishnava Aparad. Envy, fault finding, asat sangha, and judging devotees by material standards. This is all from Harinam Chintamani. It may also be probably in Satchinandan Swami's book on chanting the holy name, because that follows Harinam Chintamani very closely. Then four kinds of Vaishnava Aparad. These are actually what we find wrong with the devotee. Yes. Yes, yes, that's it. That's one.
For his origin, past.
Good. Social background and pastime, past in this life, which he's done. Good. Yeah, that's under that same category. Yeah, traces of previous sinful habits. Traces. Well, there here it says he may even do it now, little traces, you see, of eating with your left hand. Or no, but something. And one more, one you didn't get. And that's one that happens all the time.
Accidental.
Yes.
What?
Accidental fall down. Unintentional sin. Unintentional. Accidental fall down. So these are the four things that generally we criticize others for. We see his social background. Ah, he's just a rickshaw wala. Or, you know, he's a bungi. How can he be a devotee? Or he used to be a hippie. He used to take so many drugs. Or he, anyway, so many. Criticized for past sins or faults. Yeah, that's another one. Unintentional sin and traces of previous sinful habits. Okay. Yes.
There's also criticism towards people who criticize.
Criticism towards people who?
You criticize someone who criticizes
devotees.
No, I'm not saying that as a joke.
Yes. No, I read that somewhere. It is somewhere. Where is that?
In
Harinam Chintamani? I read that somewhere myself.
It's
Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
These things here, these potential things, because I notice sometimes gurus or persons, they do things like that.
Yeah.
They say that, you know, they're conditioned like that. Or
they can say it to their disciples. And then they don't get the reaction. If it's their disciple...
It depends the motive behind it.
Yeah, that too.
100%.
But they have to correct their disciples. So in that case, it's excused.
Even as a manager, you may have to do things like that.
Yeah.
But if the motive is to help, and I see it as a fault, then I have a problem.
Yes, that's right.
Criticizing
somebody who's criticizing. So, oh, that devotee, he's always criticizing devotees. He's an apparati.
You can accept that he does that and he does this point. Unintentional fall down, he criticizes that.
Yeah, he criticizes this.
It's
like that.
Criticism. So
I think I must be doing that a lot.
Because his motive is actually that.
Yes.
Criticizing those who criticize, those
who okay, again. Okay, if you criticize. See, Sankirtan, now you criticize. Okay. Okay, if you go back even one more. You criticize those who criticize those who criticize. Oh, sorry. Devotees. Then that's also apparat. Just don't criticize.
These are externals.
Right.
You may misunderstand why a person does it.
Yeah.
And
right.
Not to see fault.
Yeah.
To be ignorant of people's kind of
yes.
Naive.
Yeah, naive is not good. It's not a good quality. It's not a good quality. To be naive is not a good quality. Prabhupada also said that. He said that. You should see. Yeah, you call a thief. We're going to get into that in one of my classes. I have a really nice quote. Tamal was asking. We'll get into it in one class. I don't have it here with me. What is the difference between fault finding, blasphemy, and calling a spade? Tamal will ask Prabhupada that question, and Prabhupada will answer it very nicely to Tamal Rishi Maharaj. No, I can't because I don't have it with me. I could, it'll spoil the fun. It's really a good answer. Especially spade to spade. Oops, I shouldn't say that. Anyway, okay. Now, this is our last topic before we go into questions and answers, is anarthas. Sometimes this one, Tattva Vibhrama, is not classified as anartha, but as ignorance. And sometimes it's classified also as a type of anartha. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Harinam Chintamani, again. And the four types, the four main types, hridaya dorbalyam. Does everybody know what that means in Sanskrit? Weakness of heart. Four types of weakness of heart: attachment to objects not connected with Krishna, fault finding, envy, and desire for fame. So we can see these faults, perhaps in the character of Daksha now. I have to be careful not to criticize Daksha. But we are... what, who knows what reaction will come to me. So anyway, we're just trying to follow the purports here, following footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. Then there's aparad. We all know what that means. Four kinds of aparad: name, form of Krishna, to the Vaishnavas and to other living entities. These are all offenses. So Vaishnav aparad, we did discuss in detail, four kinds of Vaishnav aparad. Then asat Krishna. What is the Sanskrit? What is the meaning of asat Krishna? Thirst for material enjoyment. Asat. What is temporary? Yes. So material desire, basically. Yes. Four kinds of desire: for sense objects, heavenly planets, mystic powers, and liberation. These are so we can understand what's in our heart. If something comes up, we can classify it. Then the fourth is tattva vibhrama. And what is the meaning of that Sanskrit term? Confusion about tattva. Confusion or illusion, here it's translated illusion. Confusion, illusion. Yeah, bewilderment, I would also say, vibhrama, vibhram. There's a, that Brahma was bewildered. I think there's a Sanskrit word about that too that I remember. So, four types of bewilderment: about your identity, about the process of prema bhakti, about the process of sadhana bhakti, and about the Supreme Lord. So these are the four kinds of illusions that people have. So, how to get free of these anarthas? Very quickly we will discuss how to get free of these anarthas. Which one? Oh, yeah. One's identity, the process of prema bhakti, I couldn't write it all here, the process of sadhana bhakti, and about the Supreme Lord. Yeah, it's BH stands for bhakti there.
Is there anything written after Lord?
No, just Lord, for short. We know who that is. So, how to get free from anarthas? Harinam, Devakevalam. And?
Vishnu Bhakti.
Vishnu Bhakti?
All the stages of sin.
Yes. Manifested, unmanifested, beach, and kuta. Four kinds. Vishnu Bhakti destroys all. I've heard in some classes that it doesn't destroy, we still have our prarabdha karma.
Yeah, but otherwise, we even have to do with pain. If you don't have the prarabdha karma, you don't have the brains.
Oh, actually, I was reading the verses of Nectar Devotion, and it says we also it destroys prarabdha karma.
Yeah.
Actually.
We need the body to work with.
Yeah, we need the body, but it actually it does destroy prarabdha karma.
Yeah.
Yes. It's no longer an impediment. But actually, I read a very strong statement in Nectar of Devotion. I was just reading, somehow in my folio, I was reading through the Sanskrit verses. And it says, Rupa Goswami, he quotes a verse from last year we heard in Third Canto, one of our verses we had to learn, to support the fact that the prarabdha karma is destroyed. Yes, the next one, actually. Aho bata. Yes. And the next one, I think it was the next one. Savanaya Kalpate. Be eligible to perform sacrifices. Okay, it's Namadeya. Okay, okay. Yeah, Namadeya. Okay. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
It destroys the,
you
know, because of the prarabdha karma when it takes birth in such a way that one cannot
right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the verse. If you ever hear somebody say in class that your corrupted karma is not destroyed. Yeah.
For example, there was a Prabhupada gave Brahmini conversation.
Right.
Some devotee didn't have the right arm.
Oh. He didn't have a right arm.
Well, he got to chant his beads of the death man.
Yeah, I know that devotee.
From Maharashtra.
Oh, there's a Haridas also in Bombay. He can't, he has only his left hand too. He chants on his left, doesn't, huh? What's that? Lithuania. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good swimmer. He lost his right arm.
Yeah.
So
Sarvasatya. Sarvasatya?
His arm, his right arm was blown in the Vietnam War.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Prabhupada is so merciful. Even Haridas in Bombay, he has no use of his right arm, right hand. So he's chanting on his left hand, with his left hand. Yeah, so this is, you know, the mercy of the Vaishnava knows no limits. There's no limit to the Vaishnava's mercy. And Prabhupada is in that mood. Lord Shiva is in that mood. Such a merciful Vaishnava. Nityananda, Advaita. Actually, he is described as Advaita. Sadashiva is Advaita Prabhu, who called Lord Chaitanya down. He's the most merciful. Okay, I'll just... Well, we'll get to this. What is this? 4834.
What is this?
3336. Right, we learned it last year. Yanamanaya Shavanam. Yanamadaya Shavanam Kirtanaya Pavanad Yat Smarana Bichin. Then what comes next? Sharopi Sanya Savanaya Kapache Dasta Bhagavan Darshanam. So that's the verse that proves the corrupted karma. It's finished. There's another verse actually. From Nectar Devotion. Yata kanchanatam yati. Yata kanchanatam yati. Kamsyam rasa vijanata. Tata diksha vitanena. Dvijatvam jayate ninam. That is from? Hari Bhakti Vilas. So by proper initiation, you become a Brahmin. Whereas the Brahmanists say you have to change your body to become a Brahmin. But Prabhupada says, yes, the body is changed. After initiation, the body is changed. We'll read that. There's a purport in fifth canto where Prabhupada says the body is changed after initiation. Yeah.
That's the basis that Prabhupada initiated and got the women.
Women also, of course. Yeah.
This basis.
Yeah. Yes. Women also.
Trying to get back.
Anyway. Yeah, yeah, women, Vaishya, Shudras. All the low class, or those who are lower, Papa Yonaya. Is that Mamhi Parta Yapashitya? Yepi Su Papa Yonaya. Even Vaishya, Shudra, Vaishya, Sriya Vaishya, Tata Shudras. Tepi Anti Parambatim. They can achieve the highest destination. So in Kali Yuga, who is not in this category? Of Vaishya, Shudra, and women. And Brahma Bandhu, who is not in Kali Yuga, Kalo Shuddha Sambhava. Okay, now we have time for questions and answers. Yes?
One thought on that. We have the six enemies.
Yeah, six enemies: lust, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mara, matsarya.
And if one analyzes that, the first one, desire,
kama.
Mm
hmm. Kama, okay? Lust, from lust. Sometimes they say from greed.
Get frustrated.
Yes. That's right. Yeah.
Now, if you take it like that, the underlying cause of offense is actually desire to enjoy separate.
Okay, the underlying cause of offense is the desire to enjoy separate from Krishna.
Because that gives rise to everything else.
Icha dvesha smutena, dandamoena bharata. Sarge? Sarge yanti parantapa. We all come. And what does Adi Purusha have to say to that?
The underlying desire of this is
false ego, okay?
And
underlying desire is false ego. So he's finding something. Moha, maha, moha.
These are.
Okay. So which came first, false ego or material desire? That is the question. Material desire. Did we get false ego first? Or is false ego means that material desire?
No, it's independence.
Envy came first.
Envy
of Krishna. So this is a good question to research. According to Third Canto, first was Maha, Moha, and Moha. But what he's saying is that first we have, that was, of course, that material world is here. That's the first thing in this world that we're covered. That's our first covering. But in order to get that first covering, we must have desired to be here. Because those in the spiritual world, they don't get that covering. So what he's saying is that, that's what you're saying?
Yeah. But the bottom line is the bottom line is
designed to be independent of Krishna.
The whole of apparently the surface, it may appear to some kind of, you know, fence there or whatever, which could be categorized here, but it's not there.
That's, it's an interesting question. Because in the spiritual world there's no false ego, there's not none of these, there's no material desire. Yeah.
If you see how the world is created, it seems to all start from
Mahatattva. Mahatattva, yes. It's clear consciousness.
Almost
pure consciousness.
Sometimes it's translated as contaminated consciousness.
Contaminated consciousness.
So this is consciousness in which material world can be perceived. Okay.
Right.
Material objects. And after that, false ego comes.
Yes.
First you contemplate.
Mm-hmm.
Then you identify.
Then there's attraction.
And then attraction and then all those rather aversion and aversion.
Mm-hmm.
Some other form, but as far as the creation goes, it starts from
right.
Contemplation, and then unification, and then
yeah, so you're starting, I think you're looking from different points of view here. You're looking like, okay, from the creation point of view, from those who are in this world, and you're looking from point of view of someone who is outside. Yeah,
anyway,
that
the question is not
desire to be independent.
What is first? But the point is, once you're back in the original position and still moving around in this world, then I would say there's no up or down at any stage.
That's true.
And we say amongst friends there's no offense.
Yes. Yes. In which Dashamula? Yes. By the way, we need to hear more about Dashamula. Oh, after 10 days, we're going to be instructed by Madhavendra Puri, very briefly and concisely, and Dashamula Tattva. In a separate class outside of this class.
Even before we enter the material world, may have already the idea to enjoy separately from Krishna.
Before we enter the material world, we may have the idea to enjoy separately from Krishna. This is from Dashamula Tattva.
Even Dashamula Tattva start.
And this is Jiva Tattva. Is it Jiva, Bada Jiva or just Jiva?
Because we are coming from the spiritual world, before we enter even the desire is there to enjoy Prakriti.
Okay.
Before we enter Prakriti.
So he's taking again from the point of view of before the creation, before being in the material world. He's taking from the same point of view as Sankirtan Das, what the Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that we already have this desire even before we become covered by the five coverings, before we enter into the Mahatattva. Yes?
What was the Sanskrit for that expression, you see the world
as one? Atmavan manyate jagat. Somebody like to, would you like to write it up here? Prashanta, would you like to write it up here for her in the board? She'll write it for you. She'll write it. If you know the diacritics, you can write them too. She'll write it for you.
Also, I would say in this connection, I'm dealing with an artist, but you know, who says, one is inattentive.
Mm-hmm. While chanting.
That gives rise to all the other anarthas.
That gives rise to all other anarthas.
So the inattentive is basically one chants the name and mm-hmm. is actually asking Krishna to perform the good.
Yes.
Not asking anything.
That's the beginning of an artist.
That
gives rise to an artist.
If one is not dealing with that, then
okay.
one has, in principle, mm-hmm. no chance for the other anarthas.
And also, but I would also say that I was reading Namashtak by Sri Rupa Goswami, and he was saying that even if you have a little small glimmer of the holy name, you just chant, even if you chant inattentively, basically, all your sins are destroyed. It's quite interesting.
Nice.
Namabas, yeah.
The point is always how quick.
Yeah, that's true. Now that's another question. You may take million births of chanting inattentively. Yes.
Four kinds of namabas.
Right.
But that has nothing to do with the practice of sadhaka or the practice. There's only one
right.
namabas. Yeah. A namabas is in place when one chants and brings the mind back to wandering.
Bring the namabas, yes.
The other namabas are there, they're factual.
Yeah, but they're not.
Not for a sadhaka.
Yeah. For the sadhaka, only one type, and that's to bring the mind back while you chant. To be attentive, in other words, to be attentive.
And if one is doing that successfully, well then one is basically asking.
And also to avoid offense. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Helping to be a devotee.
Right.
So if Krishna reciprocates with that. And in itself, that is manifesting the structures of
it. Right.
The tendency to devotee, I mean, is the desire to embrace everything. Right.
A few seconds.
No problem is if you do that for 2 hours, well, then you should be loaded. That means you're loaded. Like a vaccination, you know, the rest of the
yes, Hare Krishna.
So, actually, a very interesting comment because there is Manashiksha, but Raghuna does the same.
There's Manashiksha.
It seems that he is dealing with all of these because he starts by establishing the goal of his worship, which is probably dealing with Tattva Vibrama.
Tattva Vibrama, the goal of his worship.
And then he says we should not aspire from duration, what to say about heavenly.
Okay, so that's Asat Krishna.
And he says that Radha Krishna gives much more valuable gem of their prema. And he speaks about lust, anger, and other.
Okay. Ridar Darbayam.
And he says that to get rid of this, we should cry out to Krishna.
Cry out to Krishna.
And then he goes further and he speaks about Kutinati and.
Aparat, Kutinati.
And fault finding.
Diplomacy.
Which seem to be like the subtle cause of the lust.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that he goes to Pratishtha.
Pratishtha.
You seem to be the cause of this Kutinati, of fault finding.
Pratishtha, okay. Pratishtha, the cause of fault finding. So here we see this in action. Nice position he's got, and then fault finding.
And then he concludes the same by saying that we should piteously cry to the Lord.
Cry Krishna.
Where you do this, you want to thank you for the Lord.
Okay, the solution. Now we're getting into solutions here. That's the best part. Cry for Krishna.
Actually, he gives solutions on each of these pages.
Really?
He says that for fault finding.
Okay, now we're going to get our solutions here. For fault finding
and diplomacy.
And diplomacy, that is under the category of aparad.
He's saying that they're like a urine or an ass.
Okay, donkey's urine, ass is urine. Okay, instead of bathing in the donkey's urine of fault finding, you should bathe in the Gandharvika, the ocean, the blissful ocean of Gandharvika, Giritari, Lila. Okay? Manashiksha, Raghunath Das Goswami.
And for Pratishtasha, he gives the.
Okay, Pratishtasha?
Compares it to the prostitute, dog eater prostitute dancing in
your heart. It's the dog eater prostitute dancing in your heart. This is pratishtasha, desire for position.
And he says that a remedy for that is association of the sadhu or a spiritual master who can keep her out of the meeting.
Okay, remedy for this prostitute in the heart is association with the guru or sadhu can kick her out immediately.
And then the question arises, what if you cannot get that association?
What if you cannot get that association? Cry piteously all the time in Vrindavan.
The names of
Giridhari. Okay? Yes?
An announcement that from reliable sources and
all. All right. Who?
And,
which reliable sources?
No, reliable sources. From the source itself. Okay. There will be a seminar already being done by this place,
Rivin Sri. Rivin
Sri.
Oh, great. Okay.
Coming up
very soon. Really? Where? Here.
It's done now in Germany. He does it somewhere.
So maybe we should get him here for Kartik. If he comes, if you ever see Ravindra, if
we
you know.
We have already invited him and he has come up partially to come to Kartik.
Okay, great, great. Okay. Yes, yes. We would really would be good for us. Okay, so there you go. All right, we'll stop here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada.